So tonight, I'm going to talk about self-love and self-acceptance. Very difficult, powerful topic in many ways. And I think I'll start by saying it was interesting looking at quotes, because a lot of the ancient writers had a very different perspective from the modern writers. You get into the 20th century and people talk about the positive aspects of self-love. Ancient writers, it's often you find condemnations of self-love. And I think they're actually talking about two different things. I think there was a tendency to refer to self-fascination and selfishness by the term self-love. And that kind of state, where I just care about myself and I don't care about anyone else, there's actually not a whole lot of love in that state. It's a very contracted kind of state. But I think that's what often was the referent of self-love, or what's translated as self-love in the ancient writings. The healthy form of self-love is very grounded. It's self-compassion, self-acceptance, self-loving kindness. It's a very generous acceptance of oneself. It's a very different thing. And this kind of self-love predisposes us toward connection with others. I'm able to love others because I love myself, and it's through loving others that I'm able to love myself. So there's almost this reciprocal relationship between this healthy self-love and connection with others. Now, how do we get self-love? Well, first of all, ideally, what happens is we come into this world and we have two completely loving, completely ideal caregivers as our parents. And it's through the way that they love us that we learn self-love. Now, of course, in practice, very few of us have Mr. and Mrs. Buddha as our mother and father. And what actually happens is that we get some aspects of self-love, but in other ways, you might say that we're in arrested development. And there are ways that we're still functioning according to the child's understanding of self-love rather than the adult understanding of self-love. The child's understanding is that love comes from the outside. I know I'm lovable when I'm getting attention and approval and everything else coming from the outside. And of course, as a life strategy, that's not particularly successful, because it turns out that, other people have their own things to do. They're not necessarily here to spend all their time giving me attention and affection and approval and all that, And so a lot of self-love is identifying the child pattern and moving toward the adult pattern. The more mature form of self-love is the ability to recognize one's own self-worth, to love oneself. It's very much an internal kind of love, an acceptance of who one is, because one is alive and one is a human being. So one important aspect of this, and one really, one word that really kind of fascinates me, is the word special. In what ways do we look at ourselves as special? In what ways do we look at what we face or the challenges we have as special? To what way do we look at our suffering as special? And of course, it's very much in the mode of the child to want to be special, because the child's logic is, boy, if I'm special, then other people are going to have to give me attention and approval and all that, and I'll get all this stuff from the outside. The word special is funny. it's actually related, etymologically related to the word species. When we say something is special, we're saying that it is of a species different from other things that you might think were similar to it. And so it's very much a word that contains separation. And so I would say we have to be very much on guard against any part of ourselves or any narrative that wants to make ourselves special. Because it's very much aligned with the child's conception of love. You know, the truth is that anything that I do, any emotion that I have, any pain that I suffer, is something that has happened hundreds of millions of times on this planet already. You know, anytime I could feel entirely isolated, alone, in despair at any moment, guaranteed there are millions of other people on the planet who have exactly that same feeling at that exact moment. And it's almost this paradox from the child's point of view of letting go of the specialness. Part of mature self-love is dropping into just the connection with others, just the fact that I'm not special. I'm one of many people. The Lotus Sutra has this wonderful image for humanity, the net of Indra. And the idea of the net of Indra, it's imagine a big fishing net, and every place where two strings cross, there's a diamond. And every diamond reflects the whole of the net. And so if anything happens in any part of the net, it's reflected throughout the whole net. And the Buddha says that that's what the human race is. We're the net of Indra. And so we're most powerfully reflecting the things that are happening to the people right around us, the people with whom we're in direct connection. In some sense, we're reflecting everything that happens. You know, and no one of us, it's part of the nature of the net of Indra. There's no privileged position. No one is any better than anyone else in that scheme. So specialness is just one thing to look at. I would say probably the single most important idea for self-love is responsibility. The more responsible I am for myself, the more I can love myself. You know, am I willing to take responsibility for my states of mind? Am I willing to take responsibility for what I think about? Am I willing to take responsibility for my habits? We all know those things that if I really cared about myself, I would be doing this every day. Like, we all have these things that we know would be good for us to be doing. Am I going to take responsibility to do those things? You know? Am I able to commit to the practice of self-love? Because self-love takes a lot of work. It's a very long game. And how can I say? Think about commitment. You know, think about it, for example, in an interpersonal context. If I say to somebody, I'm committed to you, but I'm only going to be committed when I feel like it, that's not commitment, right? You know, but we do that with ourselves all the time, you know. Yeah, I'm committed to this as long as it feels good. You know, are we really willing to make the commitment to work towards self-love? And part of what that commitment means is we'd be doing that work even on the day when it's the absolute last thing we want to do, even on the day when it is the most difficult thing in the world to do that work. That's what commitment is. So I would say, one way to think about it is you could say there's kind of a sort of a six-step plan for moving towards self-love. Step one, I would say, is generosity. This absolute generous acceptance of oneself. Forgiving the part that feels most unforgivable. Accepting the part that feels most unacceptable. Loving the part that feels most unlovable. And there's a very tricky thing about the places in us that feel unlovable. They're young places. And so we have to develop a skill that is very much like the skill that, say, the parent of a 2 or 3 year old has. Now think about a 2 or 3 year old. They'll throw a tantrum, and during their tantrum, they're going to say the most inane, ridiculous things. You know, I want to eat ice cream all the time. It's not fair. I want to eat ice cream all the time. You know, whatever it is. The wise parent loves the child, cares about the child, and completely disregards the verbal content of what the kid is saying. Obviously, what the kid is saying is complete nonsense. It doesn't even merit refuting. The less skillful parent will actually stand there and try to explain to the child, well, that wouldn't be good for your metabolism, you know. But the wise parent is just going to simply disregard the verbal content and love the child. That's what we need to do with the immature parts of ourselves. The immature parts of ourselves that saying that we're not lovable or holding whatever difficult emotions, the verbal content, and of course the mind gets stuck on the verbal content, believes the verbal content, it gets drunk on verbal content, you know. We need to love those places while completely disregarding the messages that they're saying by seeing through to how ridiculous those messages are. You know, the pain that presents, that pain is real. There's some part of us that is holding that pain, but whatever verbal message comes attached to that pain is probably not the truth. So step one is generosity. And part of that generosity of just accepting while not believing the verbal messages of these inner places. Step two is discipline. And this is about taking responsibility, about committing, about doing all those things every single day, you know, whether it's meditation, whether it's yoga, whether it's physical exercise, that thing that you need to be doing every day to feel good about yourself, the foods that you need to eat or need not to eat, you know, doing that with discipline every single day, doing it with really giving it the highest priority in a day-by-day way. It's what we do every single day that changes us. The third quality is patience. There's no quick, easy gains in the game of self-love. It's the longest game. And so we have to have that strategy of just, and this is where the generosity helps us, knowing, all right, maybe I work a month on it. At the end of the month, I might not be all that better than when I started, and that's fine. It's a long, long game. You know, and just to trust that over time that we can make improvements. And as long as you keep doing the work every single day, you will make improvements. Step four is enthusiasm. The work of self-love is really hard. You decide that, you know, when I decide I'm going to do the work of self-love, part of what happens is the most unlovable parts of me start to confront me. You know, that's the dynamic. I mean, you want to do self-love? All right, deal with this, you know. So part of it is just having enthusiasm for it, knowing that this is going to be hard work, believing that this is, you know, really giving yourself credit. This is the hero's path to embrace self-love. The fifth quality is concentration. And concentration is so incredibly important because so many of the problems we have with self-love are when we get distracted. and then we let our mind be taken over by one of those voices that tell us, you know, we're not worthy, or blah, 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 or blah, 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 you know, whatever that voice is. And so just being able to hold concentration, in fact, just being able to get out of your head and be more in your body right there, that might be a huge shift towards self-love for many people. And the final step is insight. And this is not something that so much we can do, but it's something that happens as we do the work. And insight are those moments where we suddenly have the realization of, oh my God, my whole life I've been behaving as if I believe such and such. If I don't believe that, and I don't have to believe it, then suddenly things get easier, you know? And so those moments do happen. We can't force them to happen, but they do happen. Now, you may notice that these six steps, what I've actually named here are just the six paramitas, the six perfections of the Buddha: generosity, discipline, patience, enthusiasm, concentration, and insight. But these six steps really, in many ways, provide a wonderful architecture for any personal growth project. And the project of self-love is kind of the personal growth project par excellence. It's the personal growth project that, by its very nature, supports all other personal growth. And so why is it important to do this work of self-love? I mean, of course, for any of us, we'd be much, much happier. You know, if I got to a place of complete self-love, I'd be much happier than I am now, certainly. But it's more than that. It's more than something that we owe ourselves. It is the most profound gift we can give to all the people with whom we're connected. Think about all the people you love and care about. If you embodied more self-love, it would be a profound offering to all the people you care about. And it would introduce more healing effects into their life. It would lift them up. A couple times in my life, I've just had the pleasure of being around people who just had a high degree of self-love and self-acceptance. And it's just, there's a natural buoyant feeling that you have just being close to these people, you know. And so we would benefit the people we care about, but really we would benefit the world. America right now is a place that is astonishingly lacking in genuine, grounded self-love and self-acceptance. It's what this world is starving for. And what this world needs more than anything is people who can carry that energy of self-love and self-acceptance in a grounded and powerful way so that people can feel it. You know, as an idea, it's just, you know, jabber jabber, it's just chin music. But if you can ground the energy and live it, then other people can feel it. So at this point, I'll hand out a quote sheet. I used to be a teacher, so I always have a quote sheet. This quote sheet is a little more weighted toward modern writers than ancient writers, but we have a few ancient writers. We have Mr. Rumi, and this is a quote that I know has appeared on quote sheets before. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. And then from the old fuddy-duddy, Thomas Aquinas tells us, well-ordered self-love is right and natural. So we actually get a positive statement from Mr. Aquinas about self-love. A famous quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson: what lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. A very thoughtful quote from Mr. Abraham Lincoln: I'm not bound to win, but I'm bound to be true. I'm not bound to succeed, but I am bound to live up to the light that I have. And what I really like about that quote is that it nicely contrasts the child way versus the adult way. Like the child, you know, needs to win, needs to succeed, needs to be right, needs the attention, the approval, the victory, you know, all that. Whereas the adult way is just, I'm going to live with integrity, and that's what matters, regardless of the result. A very hopeful one from Miss George Eliot: it is never too late to be what you might have been. William James tells us, act as if what you do makes a difference. It does. From Freud: most people do not really want freedom because freedom involves responsibility, and most people are frightened of responsibility. That one is very deep. George Bernard Shaw, in a rare non-humorous moment: we are made wise not by the recollection of our past, but by the responsibility of our future. A very blunt one from Carl Jung: the most terrifying thing is to accept oneself completely. Eleanor Roosevelt said, freedom makes a huge requirement of every human being. With freedom comes responsibility. For the person who is unwilling to grow up, the person who does not want to carry his own weight, this is a frightening prospect. E.E. Cummings tells us, the hardest challenge is to be yourself in a world where everyone is trying to make you be somebody else. A great one from, of all people, Lucille Ball. Love yourself first and everything falls into line. You really have to love yourself to get anything done in this world. Very practical. Thich Nhat Hanh says, to be beautiful means to be yourself. You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself. Eartha Kitt says, it's all about falling in love with yourself and sharing that love with someone who appreciates you, rather than looking for a love to compensate for a self-love deficit. Ram Dass says, your problem is you're too busy holding on to your unworthiness. Joan Didion says, the willingness to accept responsibility for one's life is the source from which self-respect springs. From the great politician and playwright Vaclav Havel, the salvation of this human world lies nowhere else than in the human heart, in the human power to reflect, in human meekness and human responsibility. Rita Mae Brown says, I think the reward for conformity is that everyone likes you except yourself. Les Brown says, accept responsibility for your life. Know that it is you who will get you where you want to go, no one else. A lovely one from Shakti Gawain: my willingness to be intimate with my own deep feelings creates the space for intimacy with another. Marion Williamson says, all of us wish we had perfect childhoods with a mother and a father who modeled ideal parental attitudes and taught us to internalize the tenets of self-love. Many of us, however, did not. Bell Hooks says, if we give our children sound self-love, they will be able to deal with whatever life puts before them. Tony Robbins says, life is a gift, and it offers us the privilege, opportunity, and responsibility to give something back by becoming more. Kristen Chenoweth says, if you can learn to love yourself and all the flaws, you can love other people so much better, and that makes you happy. We have one from Tina Fey: do your thing and don't care if they like it. Not often that Tina Fey and Thomas Aquinas are in the same arrangement here. Self-love has very little to do with how you feel about your outer self. It's about accepting yourself, accepting all of yourself. That's Tyra Banks. And Steve Maraboli says, how would your life be different if, You stopped allowing other people to dilute or poison your day with their words or opinions. Let today be the day you stand strong in the truth of your beauty and journey through your day without attachment to the validation of others.